Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Imagine This Podcast. I'm here today, Mac, with Mac and David. Hello. Say hi, guys.
Guten Tag.
Ah, there it is.
Hello.
There it is. Max getting ready for the inevitable move of all of Milwaukee to Luxembourg. That's what happens when our mayor leaves, right? We're headed out. So
we have already begun scouting space in Luxembourg to start Imagine LXE. Is that right?
LXE.
Yeah. Yeah. Feels like LXE. It's got to have a G in there, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. LXG.
There are a lot of letters to choose from. We're working on it. We're workshopping it. Yeah, big news. So big news, listener, this week, this past week, among other things, including Giannis buying a substantial share of the Brewers.
Still minority, though, right?
Go
Still
Brewers.
Minority owner.
Right. But see, you know, we've got him. He's sticking around, we think, now. And that our mayor is about to be appointed the ambassador to Luxembourg.
Barring some sort of strange partisan blocking of the appointments. Yeah, you never want to count all your chickens before they're...
Right, so matched, right, the Senate has only confirmed one ambassadorship in the last year, right?
So he's in the hopper.
Yeah,
he's in the hopper. That's right. He's in the hopper. He's in the queue. Like if he had a website open, the circle would be spinning, right? And the page is loading. These are all the metaphors I have. But for all intents and purposes, we're all planning, right? We're all sizing up his office. We're all getting ready to get Games of Thrones.
We're all Googling where Luxembourg is.
So the last city I lived in, right, Los Angeles, the mayor was recently appointed ambassador to India. Not sure if he was confirmed yet. So mayors across the nation, if you want your ambassadorship, convince me to move there. And we'll get you that ambassadorship.
You're the good luck charm.
I'm the good luck charm. That's right.
Awesome. Well, congratulations in advance. I'm very confident that Mayor Tom Barrett will become the new ambassador to Luxembourg and make sure that he will represent us, you know, in the important state functions, given the rich, you know, trade and political positioning that we need in that region, that Luxembourg, you know, when Germany and France and Spain, you know, when the G7 countries don't come through, that's where you got to go. Hey, Bo, how are we doing in Luxembourg? Got to make sure we can go to the end around. Anyway, dear listener, thanks again. And so we are, you know, all things seriously, this is a change, right? This is a significant change in our city and it'll have ramifications. And of course, it's not going to happen overnight. And of course, we'll keep you updated because apparently, you know, updated from a arts and cultural perspective, right? Perhaps it's a great opportunity to see what we can do in this new setting, right? Of perhaps with the new administration, continue to position arts and culture as a key driver for the city. So
yeah, there are a lot of really great arts, historical arts and culture figures from Luxembourg. So if the outgoing mayor needs a crash course, we would be happy to provide it. I'm sure the U.S. State Department would also be able to provide that too,
I'm not sure. How does the onboarding at the U.S. State Department go? I bet it's just a website. Self-directed modules.
We should call up Scott Beal.
Our guy Scott Beal over at the State Department. What's up, NGEN, right. fellow friend Scott Beal?
I love when you mention people I don't know on the podcast.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best, isn't it, Lindsay? Lindsay, by the way, you and everyone else listening have just joined in the same group because like nobody knows.
Hey,
Scott.
I have a friend at the State Department too. Is that is this Flex. The moment for that?
No. Yes. Why don't we call up Scott and your friend and see let's have them on the pod and see what the onboarding process is, particularly for Luxembourg.
What is the onboarding process for an ambassador? Yeah, I think it's at least a week. A lot of meetings.
Yeah.
A lot of ribbon cutting. Hey, fun fact, there are 9 UNESCO sites in Luxembourg. You want to guess one of them? Each of you going to take a guess of which one, what one of the UNESCO sites, United Nations, ESCO, United Nations, Yeah, I don't know, man. You know what it is when you say UNESCO. You know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. You know, United Nations ESCO. Really, I had to do the onboarding at the State Department. Do they let me audit that course? Yo, Tom, just point your phone at the Mayor Barrett, Ambassador Barrett. Just point your phone at the computer while you're doing the onboarding, because I'm just super curious. Periscope that. I would love to be on
Clubhouse it. That's right.
Clubhouse it. Periscope it. Put it on ICQ.
I'm pretty confident, man. There's a huge binder of information on Luxembourg arts and culture that I'll have to review.
Do you want to take a guess? Just guess one of them. Just guess. You take a swim. What do you think is one of the nine sites?
Like a really old town.
Actually, correct. Old city of Luxembourg. Old city of the fortification of the old.
Yes.
Absolutely correct, Lindsay. You got it. David, to stay in the game, you have to mash Lindsay. Can you identify another?
Wait, can I say another really old town? Or can the place where they brew beer?
Town. There's only one old town. Can you guess one other element in Luxembourg that, again, Ambassador Barrett's going to have to know about?
An old place where they brew beer or make cheese. Or maybe both.
No, we were looking for
abbey? There's no abbey where monks
hang out? No, we were looking for the Wenzel Circular Walk. We are looking for the Minette Biosphere Reserve. We are looking for the Family of Man, which is I think it's just fossils and stuff. Yeah, I don't know. There's also a circular walk.
Are you reading this? Does that actually say it on Wikipedia?
Parentheses, I don't know, man. No, I'm on the Visit Luxembourg site.
What's going on?
I'm on the Visit Luxembourg site. We also, but here's the one that I dig the most, and I don't know why Milwaukee doesn't have it. It's called the Hopping Procession of Echternach. Already famous for its Benedictine Abbey. So you don't get credit for it. Like, there's mention of an abbey founded by St. Willibrord, 698. Owes its world renown to its hopping procession. And really what that was...
Hopping as in hopping beer, or hopping as in like the physical activity of hopping?
Physical activity. Pilgrims would come to town to learn about the miracles of the monk Willibrord in 698. And so the hopping saints, pilgrims performed a hopping dance on the way to Echternach to present their offerings for the Whitsuntide holidays. But only since the end of the 18th century, the procession has been open to women as well. So from 698 to 1700, just the dudes. And then there you go.
Finally, that's fun. It's like 300 years of equity. It's fine. But all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. In the scale of things, they did all right.
Yeah.
They passed, but
yeah,
you know.
Uh huh.
So there you go. It's the purpose of the procession can be seen as an expression of joy or a prayer, communication between man and God, which involves body and spirit. So thank you, Visit Luxembourg website, for telling me about the hopping procession of Echternach.
I'm convinced. I'd like to go now.
Ambassador Barrett, mm-hmm. Get to know it. We're going to see a photo of him, like a YouTube of him doing the hopping. That's like the first. That's how they haze it.
So if visitors from his home from Milwaukee go to Luxembourg in like 3 years and we like call him up, does he have to take a meeting with us?
He's got to take a meeting.
He's got to be like, hey, welcome, right? Like, let me show you around.
We came all this way.
Yeah.
Came all this way, man, Barrett. Man. Came all this way. So we're bookmarking that. So, in addition to doing that thought exercise, we've been talking about Luxembourg. How about a thought exercise about the fact that we do have an opening for mayor, and they might tap one of us. It's possible. anything could happen. And if that were to happen,
I think you have to run. I think like hundreds of thousands of people have to tap you.
No, we're not doing an election now, right?
At some point, yeah.
Right. No, I'm not going to win an election. I'm just gonna be tapped on the shoulder. To be like, hey, you want to do this for a week or something? So if we had this, and I know this is kind of like our usual shtick, the Czar of Arts and Culture, but it wouldn't be the Czar of Arts, it would be the mayor. So what is something we would try to do as mayor of Milwaukee? That's our actually relevant to the podcast topic.
God, it was much more fun talking about Imagine Luxembourg, but sort of thinking about the new opportunities for the new mayor. If I were the Czar of Arts and Culture. I think those of you who listen to the podcast know or have heard me talk about this before. Like, I would invest a percentage of the ARPA funds, by my count at this point, 0.75%, so under 1%, of the ARPA funds into creating an arts and cultural and creative office here in our city, given that over the last 10 years, the funding for the arts in our city and county have gone down year over year. The amount of arts funding and funding for the creative economy, moreover, has been just dreadfully low compared to cities of our peers. And there's no real office for us to be able to coordinate with the city on all of the incredible creativity and vibrancy that can happen in our city. So I would start a arts and cultural and creative office with just under 1% of all of the ARPA funds that are coming into our city. How about you, Mac?
I agree. I think that's a great policy. I think the other part I would want to support, I don't know how to do this with mayoral decree, but I think there isn't a lot of shared understanding about the sort of the value what our artists and creatives are providing in the city. And I think it'd be helpful to have like a shared understanding, almost like a market, if you will, for like, what does this cost and what is worthy of it? Because I think a lot of people assume people do it for free or they do it because of the passion. And I sort of wonder, is there a way to do a better job of making, you know, making folks aware of the real costs, you know, and the value that our arts and creative sector does provide, and not just in the flow of the actual performance itself, or even the education that's definitely present, but just sort of the contribution to the built environment, the contribution to the sense of inclusion, the sense of vibrancy it does create. So I think I would focus on, I would, if I had the opportunity, I would focus on that just as it's any other industry like electronic, you know, or tech industry. I think we devote a lot of, I imagine we devote a lot of stuff to that. How do we, I'd really be eager to try to build that up. So that'd be my take. Lindsay.
Well, I would oversee the process of outlining a cultural plan that would stick. That would be in line with what David said as well, that we need an office at the city level that would hold that. But you know, attempts have certainly been made, but those documents that have been generated in the past have not necessarily been revisited or understood to be like a guiding light for the city. So I would prioritize that. And I would round up David's 0.75 to a solid 1%, which still is a lot of money, but not a large percentage of the ARPA dollars. And allocate that to grants for artists in a WPA style program.
I have a proposal.
Let's hear it.
Can we Voltron ourselves into one person, then run for mayor?
I don't know that would.
I just want to be the right elbow.
Any more effective?
I just want to be the right elbow that leans on the chair and thinks about things. Yes, we could Voltron it. We could fuse it together.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's a good idea to put all these plans together. I think that's right. That's spot on. But in the near time, thanks for indulging our own whimsy, listener. We're excited to have Melkia Stampley join us after the break to talk about the incredible work that she's been doing, she and her collaborators, with the second annual Milwaukee Black Theater Festival. About Melkia, Melkia is a TV, film, and stage actor, voiceover artist, and stage director. A quintuple threat, some might say, from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, coming from a large musical family, the daughter of a pastor and an educator. Formerly trained at Marquette University. What's up, Golden Eagles? And then Skylight Music Theater and the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. She's a founding ensemble member of Milwaukee Bronzeville Arts Ensemble and an artistic associate with Chicago's Congress Square Theater. You might have caught her on Showtime's The Chi, had a recurring role there, as well as a role in HBO's Native Son a couple years back. She is the artistic director of the Milwaukee Black Theater Festival. And after the break, we'll talk about how great it is. Our tomorrow will be a better day.
Cause we are proud of what we know. Melkia, hello. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you on. We are fan-personing a little bit after having seen your incredible production in the Milwaukee Black Theater Festival this last weekend. Mac and I both went to Pretty Fire on Saturday. And so we are still riding that glow of having seen live theater, having seen such an incredible production. So we're excited to get into that. So thanks for taking the time. You're still in the middle of it. So we really appreciate you. You're in the middle of a busy life, just coming off of the theater festival.
Being a working actor, being a working producer. Yeah.
Just in general. Just in
you
general.
You probably have an Etsy page where you sew things. I'm sure you've got tons of hustles, and appreciate you being on the 250th ranked arts and culture pod in the United States. Appreciate you taking time to be on that. So
Yeah. Well, we would love to invite you to start off with our standard opening question to get into it. Can you tell us about a story of an arts and culture experience that left a strong imprint on you? Could be early in life, could be recent, or something that really was powerful.
I'd say the most, there's several memories that definitely come to mind. I'll mention two quick ones. I saw a TV production of Raisin in the Sun with Danny Glover as Walter Lee. And it's a version that you don't see very often. And so I didn't know who Sidney Poitier was as a little kid. And so that was my Walter Lee. And for me, I don't know if even Cosby Show may have been out already, but to see a Black man in a Black family being emotionally vulnerable. And it wasn't, some parts were funny, some parts were heartbreaking, as you do see in a sitcom, but it was real life. I felt like it was just real. And I feel like I've been chasing that moment or that performance, that emotional vulnerability that I felt like Danny Glover gave ever since. I've been looking for that authenticity, that the nugget of truth ever since. And I was little, but that it made a strong impact. And then second is as a kid, my oldest brother, who is he's a Broadway actor and great, like the perfect big brother he just is. Several years older than me, I was in elementary school, he was in high school in Whitefish Bay, and we would go to all of his performances and choir concerts and things. And I saw him in Oklahoma at Whitefish Bay High School. And I mean, to this day, oh, what a beautiful morning, that song. It's so special to me. And watching him as a kid is what shaped, I think, my artistic journey. My mom talked about it. She's a musician. But, you know, I didn't grow up, I was in school band and things, but I wasn't a professional like her or doing those kinds of things. But to see my brother doing it in the school that I would end up at. And it was like, I want to do that. And I did. So it really helped chart, you know, the course of my life.
So tell me about, again, you have other siblings?
I do. So there's six of us.
Wow.
there's six of us. And of the six, my brother and I are the only two who are in the arts.
Okay.
And then except for one sibling, the rest of them are in education.
Okay.
And so administrators and educators and such. And so my mom's a retired educator.
Okay.
But she was also an organist, a gospel organist, and she played all over. And my dad's a preacher, which is certainly an art form. So we were, you know, we came up under two very great artists. Yeah.
I was ready to make this, like, was it like this? It wasn't Star Search every week in your house. It was just you and your brother, right? That was just the angle. I was going to think, like, did you have a bus and you went around to, like, different, but no, you quickly clarified. No, it was just me and my brother. And again, your mom had, you know, and if your father's a pastor, he's performing every week. I mean, interpreting the word and doing, you know, holding that. So, I mean, yeah. So
let me be clear though. We did not have a choice in performing. Like, sang, the six of us. It's a ready-made choir, soprano, alto, tenor.
Yes.
I was harmonizing before I could talk.
Yeah.
So we sang all over the place.
Okay.
It just stuck with my brother and I. Everyone else was, I think, a little traumatized by it.
So. Yeah. The workload at a young age, there's only so many reps people have in them, right? Like, and then, you know, you and your brother had some more reps in you still, but
yeah.
That's so lovely. And what's the age separation between you and your brother?
Nate is 8 years.
So older. When were you Nate's sister, and when was he Malkia's brother? When did that ever cross over? Did that ever shift?
Yeah, that's so funny. I definitely was Nate's sister for all of my high school.
Sure, because you had a similar track, right? You have a similar path there. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And he has a gorgeous baritone voice. He's when I look at Will Smith and Obama, I'm like, that's my brother. Like the two personalities. So like,
did you write his Tinder profile? You should write his Tinder profile. Cause that's a winner right there. I'm Will Smith and Barack Obama. It's like, well, geez, that's just going to get all the hits right there. You should write that just right there for a living. What a generous assessment. That's such a great, I'm sure it's legit, but like, wow. Okay.
Oh yeah, no, he's pretty special. I think the switch came in the last, it's been in the last 6 or 7 years. Just as I've become more of an arts leader and doing things outside of performance, then it became Nate's Malkia's brother. And I love it. He loves it. He absolutely loves it. So it's great. It's all love.
Well, you mentioned Whitefish Bay, but you've also trained formally here, you know, in Milwaukee. And yet you at the same time, you've performed regionally and nationally on stage, television, and film, right? So let's talk a little bit about that. How has Milwaukee informed your practice, or how might you say it's manifested in your artistic practice?
Yeah, Milwaukee shaped me. You know, I was the kid that was bused into Whitefish Bay. So although I was in school, I'm still school in the suburbs. I definitely came from, you know, the 53206 area, the hood. You know, it was definitely that. So I was doing a lot of character study as a young age, and you know, this is the height of the crack epidemic, the crack era, and gang violence, the drive-bys, people taking, you know, people's Jordans for, you know, at gunpoint and all of those things. I grew up around that. So I was balancing these two worlds, and Whitefish Bay introduced me to the formal practice of theater. But I felt like my community, especially my dad's church, you know, that was in the hood, it helped shape the kind of performer and the kind of art that I would be pushing for. And so I feel like, you know, in a way, I'm still straddling those two worlds, this classical, traditional, someone needs to let you in the door. There's a gatekeeper. I'm still in that world while also trying to honor these people's shoulders that I'm standing on, the church mothers, the deacons, and, you know, the homeless, I've seen so many different characters, but I knew at a young age, instilled by my parents, that I represent them. And I have to make them proud, and those coming behind me, I'm showing a way for them as well. And no, I am no better than anyone, anyone. So Milwaukee taught me that with the gap, that segregation, these 5 minutes away. We live 5 minutes away from Whitefish Bay, 5 minutes in the hood, five minute bus ride. And yet, very, very different. But back to your question, sorry, how Milwaukee my theater or just the arts for me. It was through my school. We had Pam Krieger, who is a Milwaukee known choreographer, director. She did the musicals at my school. And so she introduced me to Skylight Music Theater.
Yeah.
And they put me in a show my junior year of high school. And then she was like, hey, my old choir director in Whitefish Bay, he moved to Madison. He was like, hey, I'm doing Little Shop of Horrors in Madison. We want to hire you as a professional before my senior year of high school. And so then it's all about who you know, who you know, and who's willing to open the door for you and say yes. And I was fortunate, you know, to have those people and for them to be my teachers initially. And then very quickly they turned into my colleagues.
You know, okay, you remind me, I have a really good colleague, he's sort of Public Allies, and her son went up through Marquette and had a similar thing where he was acting. Now he's at Fordham doing acting, right? Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, she herself had a similar story. She was busting to Whitefish Bay, you know, and lived there. So you might, I'm not sure if you know her, but what she shared with me is that for her son, she remarked about like, he had a way leads on the way. Like he got into local stuff and she had to go like, it ain't that easy out there in the world. And I wonder, did you have a similar vibe or like, wow, these awesome people are introducing you. Like I'm getting gigs at Stylite. I'm going to Madison, but like, that's a lot different from when you become, was it similar that, like you said, it is way leads on the way. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I wonder, did it kind of like set you up like, wow, how neat. People are opening all these doors. Well, maybe that's not necessarily the reality when you're out there trying to hustle. And again, maybe I'm wrong, but I heard a lot of resonance when she shared that, like, well, my son's got to know that ain't what it's like, you know, when you're out there hustling.
I totally resonate with that. And it is true to a certain extent.
Yeah.
What I had to learn was eventually I can't keep relying on these people that I know.
Yeah.
Or that turned into me being put into a particular box.
Yeah.
And so then I came up dancing and singing. And so then I was the girl in Anything Goes or Cabaret or Chicago, you know, in the cute little outfit. But I was like, I wanted something more, but that's what I was known for, or that's what the opportunities they felt I was best for. Mm-hmm. So then I had to find a way to break out of that. And I think that's for anyone. When you want to go to another level, you then have to be willing to take the hit, to have during that rough transition of not book saying no. I've had to say no a few times. No, I don't want to do those kind of roles anymore. Mm-hmm. I want to pursue something else. And then that something else doesn't pan out. And now I'm just unemployed until, and so a lot of trial and error. But yeah, that privilege part, it's hard to deny that. You can't deny it. I know that it was a lot different for me going to Whitefish Bay versus had I gone to Hamilton or Pulaski, a school that wasn't as resourced. So I am grateful for that all the time, the people who opened doors for me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one thing to get the doors open, but like you're saying, to keep gigging, that's where it keeps coming, right? Like that's where the chops show up. That's where the, you know, and you know, hopefully the luck is the residue of good design, you know, in terms of getting out there. And I, you're speaking to this, you're centered here in Milwaukee. You're wearing your Milwaukee Black Theater Festival shirt right now. Yet, you know, you've been on The Shy. You've been on movies, you know, you could be working elsewhere. What does it mean for you to be centered here when you know, and you've seen that Milwaukee isn't necessarily a center of industry, right? For some of these pieces. What does that mean for you?
Yeah, Milwaukee is home. It's where I've been able to work and flex my muscles as an artist, as a leader, as a person. It's where I first realized, ooh, I think I can make a difference, or I have an idea. Let me speak this out loud to some collaborators or to some friends, and maybe we can make something happen. And not that can't happen in other places, but I love the relationships that I have here. I love the connections that I have in this community. And so in a way, Milwaukee is where I'm able to go deeper in my craft, to hone my skills as a director, to try producing and writing and so many other things beyond performance. And that's the gift that Milwaukee has given me. And so I also feel like I need to stay connected to Milwaukee, because as I get better, I need to be able to open that same door for others and continue to feed back into that. So,
So building off of that, some of those multiple hats of being a writer, producer, director, all of the things. So you're serving as the artistic director of the Milwaukee Black Theater Festival. And this is the second year. The first year was wildly different, right? Zoom. I remember tuning into a couple that were, you know, recorded where like a couple artists were able to get together in the same room, but they recorded on Zoom talking with another actor. It was just, you know, we were in this very different place in the pandemic. And so I'm curious actually about the difference of planning that virtual experience versus this year, but can you remind us of that origin of the Black Theater Festival coming to be, and what was the speaking idea into existence that led to this?
Yeah. So last year, this was the end of May. George Floyd had recently been murdered. And then this was, I think that same week, I lost like three jobs that I had coming. I think everyone was trying to be optimistic, thinking, okay, by July, August, things would be opened up. And I felt like by May, theaters and production companies knew that they couldn't do it, but they were hesitant in telling those who they had contracted. Mm-hmm. And so things just started rolling out. This is also around the same time you started to see organizations, some post Black Lives Matter, and then some being very against it. And so a lot of conversations with friends who are in the arts as admin or consultants and artistic directors, and should they, shouldn't they, why should they, because they're doing the work, so why do I need to say that, it's redundant, all it ran the gamut. And I was even working with a company at that time who did not post anything, and I said, how can you be working with me for a project when you don't see that it's necessary to just say Black Lives Matter? And we paused rehearsals. The director agreed, and we stopped until they figured it out, and they did. So all of that is happening end of May. And I didn't know what to do. It was a very difficult time when you lose, my husband and I are freelance artists. We lost everything. And so Brent Hazelton, who was the new appointed Milwaukee Chamber Theater artistic director, longtime friend, DeMonte Henning, who is also a longtime friend, well-known actor in Milwaukee. We got together. We were just like, okay, let's talk. Like something needs to be happening. And we met on the steps of the War Memorial and we just shared. It was awkward at first because it's like, how close do you sit? Like we were still new to all those things. We knew something needed to be done. And we knew some national movements would start happening. But we were like, but what about Milwaukee? What about our Black artists here? And I know all artists are struggling. I get that. All theaters are struggling. But if I'm going to do something right now, it's going to be for Black artists. And they agreed. We all agreed. And out of that conversation came the idea of a festival. And we were like, are we crazy?
Yeah, a party. We're going to do a party. Let's do a party, right? Let's do this, right? But why not, right? Yeah.
Right. But we were like, well, let's see. Let's test the water. So we wrote a little cute email and sent it to Miss Sherry Williams-Pinnell. And she was like, yes. To Barbara Wando, Black Arts MKE. She was like, yes. Tariq Moody. He was like, yes, Be Free. She was like, yes. And a few others. And we were like, okay. I mean, if Tariq is like, yeah, this is a good idea. I don't know. I'm just going to trust Tariq. We admired these people. And so we gathered in a room and we started talking about what this could look like. And so we just pulled together, you know, the artists that we really respected, tried to have a wide variety. And then we knew it had to be virtual. We just didn't know how we were going to do it. But no, we did. We put it together. 2 months later, we were able to offer that. I think it was something like 9 hours of content or 10 hours, something. So a lot of hours of content that we were able to provide. And this year, we came together. We were meeting weekly. And we decided we wanted to do it again. We were like, well, it worked. Mm-hmm. People liked it. We mm-hmm. felt great about it. We were able to pay 43 artists. Mm. That was huge for us.
Yeah.
Oh, so huge for us. And some of them union wow. artists.
Yeah.
And so to come together again this year, it was scary because we were like, we're starting all over mm-hmm. in person.
Right.
Maybe.
Right. Two plans. You have to do two plans, or you have to do multiple plans, right? For that.
We did. So, yeah. We absolutely did. But we were so fortunate I'm so glad that we took that risk, you know, back in like April to decide to do in person. And we, mm-hmm. you know, we had the challenges with, you know, with this uptick in the Delta variant. But we felt like we could provide a safe enough space where we could gather people together, and I felt like people enjoyed it. And we'll, you know, we're just building, but this was starting from scratch, felt like mm-hmm. in person. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, thinking back to April until now, when you were in that space of thinking, all right, we want to carry some things forward, want to maybe change some things from how we did it virtually. What ended up being how you envisioned it? What ended up being different, maybe from like a internal artist experience perspective, maybe from like an external, what you're hearing from audiences, like how did it play out?
Yeah. Well, last year we were like, anything that intersects with theater, we want to do it. So music, dance, poetry, you know, all of it. And this year, because it was in person, the costs, you know, increased exponentially. Mm-hmm. And so we had to scale down. And so we were like, what is this really about? What are we really trying to offer? We can always grow, but what is at the root of this? And it is theater. It is the text. And it is, it's theater. And so we focused on that priority this year. And we do hope to build, you know, from there, but that's ultimately what guided us this year. And then we knew, okay, Black artists, that was clear. And we weren't that creative with the name of the festival. We were like, what should this be called? Well, what are we doing? This is a Black theater festival. But once we got that taken care of, okay, we can't do a lot. So we're just gonna focus on theater. Okay, what kind of theater? Or at least, who is this for? Mm. And as we started to look through plays and consider other artists we wanted to work with, we realized that there are not a lot of Black female playwrights. One, mm-hmm. there are not a lot of Black female roles. Two, you see an influx of playwrights recently, I'd say in the last 8 to 10 years, mm-hmm. but prior to that, you aren't seeing a lot. You just aren't. I just knew Lorraine Hansberry growing up. Mm-hmm. So we were like, okay, we're gonna make that a priority. We have to. How can we not, with Miss Sherry there and Barbara, myself, even just looking at ourselves, we were like, we need more of us in the next 15 to 20 years. And so we need to give these opportunities to younger women. And that's what we focused on. And I felt like we did that very well. I was very proud of, you know, how we were able to do that this year.
Yeah, I was sort of, and again, I know that the theme was around the resilience and strength of Black women, but you intentionally had a recognizing the legends, you had a youth piece. So it to me also speaking, it's not just about the work itself, but acknowledging the intergenerational, right? These, you know, that, and that seems to be part of this event as well, right? And setting a foundation for it as we move forward, always going to honor this, like you said, the shoulders are being stood on, and also putting a light on who's coming down the pike, right? Who else is coming up? Did I pick up on that too?
Absolutely. I am, because we are, you know, that I'm, mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm butchering that, that quote, but it is that we knew we had the audacity to call this the Milwaukee Black Theater Festival. We were definitely confident in doing that, but we knew we couldn't honor or work with or engage every Black theater artist. Mm-hmm. We knew that. And so little by little, we will But until we can, we need to acknowledge that we don't have all the answers. We are not the first ones to be trying to do something like this. We are standing on someone's shoulders, and there are young people already doing this work. And so it was our way of reaching out to those we haven't worked with, and then acknowledging those who have helped build us, and then pouring into those who are on their way. And that was, the Legends event was, to me, my most favorite. I felt like there was a lot of healing in the room. It's hard being a producer, and it's really hard being a Black theater producer in this city. You are not getting the same dollars as the white theaters are getting. And then when you consider the economic disparities and such, the work, the amount of hours you have to put in when you already have a family or a job, or you just don't have it, it's hard. It's hard when someone else's parents are bankrolling them, or they get that one little grant. But when you only can work project by project, you know, it can almost kill you. It can almost kill you. And so you're exhausted. And we could see that from when we looked at the theater's past. And so to bring them together and acknowledge them, we got so many thank yous. Thank you for seeing us. Thank you for acknowledging that we are here. And thank you for honoring us. Our Black producers, starting from 1967, helped build Milwaukee theater. They did. They absolutely did. Whether they were then, you know, plucked away and then being that token Black actor at Milwaukee Rep or wherever the case, they helped shape this community. And that was our way of letting everybody know they matter, they are important, and we love and cherish them, and we have to keep celebrating.
You know, building on that, amplifying the next generation part, Mac and I had the privilege of going to just one small piece of this large festival, of seeing Pretty Fire. The person on stage had your last name. Are you related to them?
You can see our crack research staff.
I don't want to
honestly
assume.
we are literally assume. As you're talking, like, wait a minute, I know they have the last name. We're like Googling, we're like searching. It's like, all right, just ask. We don't want to assume. We don't want to assume nothing. So.
Oh yes, Kamara is my niece. She is okay. My niece. Yes, my sister that's right above me. Okay. This is her oldest daughter. Jeez. And yeah, wow. It's great. And I try to tell people she's greater on her own.
Right. Right.
Without me.
Yeah.
And she's a senior at Howard University in their musical theater program.
Yeah.
And she came up through First Stage and with Black Arts Employee. The very first show I directed, I cast her, which was Black Nativity at Black Arts Employee and the Marcus Center. I cast her as Mary. Ooh. And it was bold because you usually just don't see a child, you know, playing Mary. I think she was 15 or 16 at the time. But she did such a great job. Yeah. And she really she loves this industry. She's talented.
Yeah.
She's so talented. And so DeMonte has known her. He's worked with her. And so I'm telling people, I'm like, I promise that was DeMonte. He said in a meeting, he was like, yeah, so I think I found my actress for the show. And we were like, who? And he's like, Kamara Stampley. And I was like, I don't know if she's ready. That's too much. That's too much.
Man.
Oh, yeah, she was ready.
She was ready.
Oh, she was my God. Ready.
90 minutes. Yeah. 90 minutes. You know, hashtag real talk. I picked that one out of actually time availability. Like I could make the 8 o'clock, right? So I'm like, I picked it. And my comprehension reading isn't great. Cause when I sat down, I'm like, wait, there's only one person in the cast. Wait a minute. And then I'm like, wait, they're gonna carry 90 minutes without intermission. And then 5 minutes in, I forgot it was only a one person show. Right. I forgot because of how Kamara just owned that stage and inhabited all of the people that were part of Charlene's life, that, you know, telling that story. And then before I knew it was over, you know, I was like, wait, where'd it go? You know, she, you know, of course, you know, it was, yeah, it was a tour de force, you know, it really was phenomenal. So
I'm so proud of her. And yeah, I know she wants to stay close after, you know, she's out of school. So I hope that, you know, there's, you know, room for her in Milwaukee, in the Milwaukee theater community, because we need more. We need more of her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you were mentioning, you know, that this is, well, you didn't mention, I interpreted this, like the fact that you were able to pull this off with all the protocols and it was a good crowd, you know, in the room. Obviously we'd love to have more, but you also had to space it out. So there's some protocols that are being honored and we're all wearing, yeah, masks. So we are slowly coming back. You know, last week we had Summerfest producers on talking about they're going to be doing vaccination screenings, ooh, at the door, offering them. So like there's protocols being placed. And so we're slowly coming back to having live performances. But we know that we don't want it to go back to normal, because normal wasn't working for everybody, right? So we do have a chance. And again, I think the festival is an example of charting a new path, right? And trying to bifurcate a new way looking forward here in the city when it comes to having, you know, an equitable arts and culture scene. What do you hope, what lessons or innovations, right, that have been learned, how do you hope that Milwaukee arts and culture continues to hold them and center them as we move forward? And you were hinting at that in terms of resourcing. There's some hinting there, but are there other things that you sort of witnessed as you put this festival together, or as you're talking around, what do we need to keep holding center, you know, as we move forward?
Sure. First is local. Mm. Honor, respect, and value and pay your local artists on all levels, whether they're an administrator or they're painting the set, they're box office, whatever. There's a tendency to have for there to be a wow factor for anyone from out of town who comes to Milwaukee, and somehow everywhere else is going to teach them how to better do a job that a local artist or administrator could do. Mm-hmm. When we pour into our local artists, meaning our students, UWM, Marquette, Carthage, UW Parkside, UW Whitewater, Stevens Point, Madison. I'm naming schools that have strong theater programs. Mm-hmm. And some of them have great dance programs too. When we invest in them, then you're ensuring that you have people to continue the arts and culture scene here in the city. And then also think you just got to do something different. You got to do something different. If you're shaking your head, I'm sorry if I'm a little crass, but if your staff is all white or predominantly white, mm-hmm, and you all are shaking your head, it's like, yeah, this is a great idea. You need somebody else in the room. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to be saying, maybe not. Mm-hmm. Somebody else, like if everybody is always agreeing, if everybody thinks that, like, I'm seeing that we are afraid to say no, that's problematic. Mm. We're in the arts. We're still afraid to do that. And so even some of the diversity pieces we're seeing or initiatives, it's coming from white leadership, reading an article or having a conversation. Mm. And it's not really coming from the bottom up, because the bottom up don't have a voice, because there's the fear of they don't want to hear me, or I will be fired, or this isn't the time. And that's the culture that is telling them that. And so when we can embrace a difference of opinion, and that comes from different backgrounds, different education levels, everyone does not need a college degree to be in arts and culture. Everyone does not need to have gone to the greatest school or any school like that. We have to embrace that. And that's where I think true change will happen. Mm-hmm. Local and difference of opinions. Mm-hmm.
And you're also suggesting, or I heard you talk earlier about gatekeeping, right? It seems to be woven in that notion of who gets to be centered, who gets to declare what's worth things. Somehow that has to be disrupted. Right.
That's the only way theater or the arts. It's so easy for me to focus on theater. Yeah. That's the only way that we will survive, because these young folks don't care. They don't care if they see something that's problematic. They will not support it. There is not the I'm finding I've been challenged. I've been in some really interesting focus groups nationally. And I've been challenged in a way that I never have been before, where I've been told, well, just because you're getting paid, you're tolerating, because you're being employed, you're employed by this, you know, whoever I'm working with at the time, you are tolerating and representing all of their problematic practices. And it's hard for me to say, well, I have a mortgage to pay, I have kids to take care of. You know, I can say that, but when these kids have come out of school with nothing, they're like, really? And then you're gonna throw that back on me? If I'm willing to have nothing from the get-go and continue with nothing, but have my integrity, what are you doing? And I wake up with that every day. I really do. So we have to think about them. We want them in the audience. We want them on our boards, really. We really do. We want them to be the advocates for the arts because they're so passionate. And if they're not passionate about the arts, then we're gonna lose them once the baby boomers have transitioned on. I don't know. We have to do something different. We have to keep them. And I think the way to keep them, or not even keep them, engage them and to embrace them, is to let them know we are willing to change. We are listening to you. We want you wholeheartedly. We want all of you. We don't want to compartmentalize you and only want this part. And you have to always be kind. You have to make me feel good. And you have to applaud the kind of work that we're doing. No, shake it up. Shake it up. I'm going on a tangent. I start preaching.
You told me that given the family business, it's probably hard not to imagine that possibility. But I'm also hearing you say, from the notion of, and again, maybe you didn't say this explicitly, but they will create, young people will create their own art ways, right? I think you're speaking from an institutional standpoint. You're almost speaking straight to, like, hey, institutions that exist, if you want to still be here, somehow we have to have these folks be seen and felt and see themselves in this work somehow. And that's what I'm hearing you say.
That's exactly
because otherwise it'll happen either way. They're going to create either way. And with the democratization of tools and the democratization of things, that's going to be accelerated even more. Right. So
it's just, are they going to stay in Milwaukee?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's right.
Will Milwaukee be, when I was coming up, Milwaukee was not the place that I wanted to stay because I started to see, as a teenager and in college, I wasn't seeing anyone that looked like me, the lead role of anything, not leading us, not directing, not the lead actor, not choreograph, nothing. And although I love theater, I knew this was not for me. It took me going to Chicago, being in New York, and then ultimately it was my family that brought me back, and then realizing that, oh, Milwaukee theater also is my family. And then that gave me, once I embraced that, then I had the confidence to say, look, we got to change some things, y'all. There's no reason that your brochures should have 3 Black kids on it. And then I don't see not nan Black kids anywhere else in person ever. We have to change some things, guys. Why are we doing all, I was comfortable because it was home, but it took me going away. How can we keep our kids here? Or how can we keep them wanting to come back and not letting crazy situations? Like for me, I have 3 kids. It was like, I need help with my kids. I still want to be an actor. How can I do both?
Yeah.
And for me, it was Milwaukee. How can we not have it be those situations that bring our younger ones back? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because what you're just saying is, you weren't a trailblazer for the sake of being a trailblazer, right? If you don't see yourself there, I'm going else, you know, but what you're saying, there are other life circumstances that, well, I'm going to be here and you're going to make a go of it. But there's a lot of other people that are making a different choice because they're not necessarily beholden to the same situations you have. Right.
Yeah.
And that's,
I love how you said that. Everyone is not a trailblazer.
Yeah.
Some people just want you.
They want the trail. They want the trail.
Yeah.
Come on. I saw someone, a colleague, younger, and I was like, ooh, so you think you could take over the festival one day? And she was like, no, seeing how tired you are. I chuckled and it was like, okay, I also have to work on it. Not, I don't want it to be so hard.
Right. Right.
A theater company,
right,
to produce a play. We, come on, that, cause that's not fun either. That's, yeah, not fun. Cause then, yeah, go to Minneapolis where they pour more money into the arts, mm, or, yeah, Austin or, you know, Atlanta. Yeah. We don't want that.
No.
Let's pour. And which is why I love Imagine MKE. Cause I feel like you guys are tackling that need in Milwaukee. It's, yeah, so needed. And I felt that when you all started, I was like, that's what's missing. That's what's missing. Instead of these individual institutions trying to fight for everybody, it was one institution representing everybody.
Well, I thank you for saying that, because you know, me and Lindsay are just gonna replay that in our minds every time the times get dark in our rooms. You know, when the word gets dark, I was like, well, Melchia says we're doing all right, so come on, guys. But all, to be real, like I think for us, the barometer, I see this, I don't know if Lindsay claims it, but I say the barometer for us is, how are marginalized artists doing in our city? Because if they ain't doing well, then we all ain't doing well, right? And that's why we got to do that. So one, I do on a personal level appreciate you hearing that, but yeah, we pay keen attention to that, because yes, we want orgs to thrive, but not everybody has to be affiliated with an org, right? People just got to be able to create from wherever, mm-hmm, they feel, mm-hmm, they can create. And for some folks, it's being unaffiliated. That's important for them to have that independence and flexibility. So how do we have this ecosystem so they can find the resources they need to create and do? So thanks for that note. And we still have to keep accepting the challenge, because the mission is certainly not accomplished. Yeah, we still got a ways to go.
Yeah,
course, I'll turn it back over to Lindsay, because I know we could talk with you all day. You've got 90 different careers.
You've got things.
Lindsay, what, close us out here.
Yeah, you know, Malkia, we normally close this question that I will get to, but I will note that you've already basically delivered a masterclass in the answer to this question over the last about 5 to 10 minutes. So if you're like, nah, I already said this, that's okay. But we always bestow this power of, what if you could be the city's czar of arts and culture and really make some lasting policy change. And I'm wondering, when we think about that question of how do we create an ecosystem where young Black artists can stay, can thrive, want to stay, like, what's the magic thing that you might do as czar that would really move us towards that?
Okay. I guess I have a public answer, and then maybe over drinks we can have.
Fair enough.
No, we'll take that. That's fine.
It's gonna sound. Let me just preface this by saying, I love the art scene in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I'd say nearly everyone that I could even think of, I respect and have a relationship with in theater, and have worked with. But I do think at some point, in order for there to be really big change, some people have to be willing to move out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ever want it to be ugly. Of course, I want it to be an acknowledgement and then sharing, and whether, mm-hmm, that's opening it up and, mm-hmm, then you transition out. And I do believe if I was czar, I would plant that seed in those people, because I don't want to control anyone. I would want them to come to it, but hopefully paint a clear enough picture for them to see that if I can't do this, if I am in the way, if I am asking people under me and around me to continuously educate me so I'm comfortable with change, maybe I need to move.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to be and feel good about it. Mm-hmm. That's what I want for Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And I think that is really possible.
Yeah.
The next 10 years in Milwaukee is going to look very different, the art scene. I, mm-hmm, do believe, I firmly believe, you're going to see a Black artistic director of a theater company. I do believe that you are going to see a BIPOC artist running Milwaukee Ballet or Dance Works or Wild Thing or Milwaukee Art Museum. I do believe it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I do believe. I just don't want it to happen because someone's been pushed and forced out.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to get it and then make that transition. That's what I would do as Czar.
Thank you for that rain.
You know, it's a short term. We don't have a lot of juice on our end, but we are committed to the legacy of that, which is, leadership that looks like the city, right? Leadership that looks like, the future and the young people in the city, right? And what I'm also hearing you say is, you know, that's great that we want to get people on board, but we also don't need to spend a lot of time educating people to get on board. Like that can be resources spent moving the work outside and moving the work out there. And so,
and we're getting there. I'm on the side of hope.
Yeah.
I wasn't for a long time, but I am. I'm choosing that while still working, but I am choosing hope.
Malkia, how, you know, I know the festival's over, but how can folks find you, right? And keep following the work that you're doing?
I do have one of those professional Facebook pages, Malkia Stampley. You can find me there. I have a website as well.
Yeah.
I am on Instagram, all those things. I'm working on a show on AMC. It's a new show called 61st Street.
Wow.
Trailer just came out, I think, last week or so. And so I was actually shooting that all through planning for the festival. So that was the big summer surprise.
Oh, wow.
I think the episode comes out, the pilot, in January, but the series comes out in like April, you know, and that's when.
Wow. And what do you got? 10 episode series? We talking 20? What's the package there? What do you got?
It's a special TV event. So it's two seasons only. Wow. Okay. And I think 8 episodes each. And then I'm in 12 or 13 of the 16.
Wow. All right. All right.
Grateful.
Oh my gosh. Prestige Television, AMC Prestige Television. Love it. Excited to and we'll probably hit you up when it's closer to get out there.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
We'll hit you up and you can plug it. But of course, you'll be doing the junkets. You'll be like Entertainment Tonight and da 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 da. And then
come our way again, please.
Then us jamokes it. Imagine this podcast muscle in, you know, muscling Mary Hart and John Tesh. I don't even watch Entertainment. I don't even know who's on the show anymore. All right. So it's Lopez. It's Mario Lopez or something. Malkia, thanks so much. Such a joy. And thanks so much for your not just for your artistry, but for your leadership of town. It's such a pleasure and an honor to have you lead us. And we look forward to following your lead in making our city one for that's going to be more inclusive and equitable. And it's going to be great. Thanks so much, Malkia.
Thank you so much.
Well, Mac, what a lovely interview with Malkia that was. I'm leaving feeling completely charged to move forward with the vision that she shared for the future of arts and culture in Milwaukee. How about you?
Agreed. And how do we have like the talented Stampley family needs to have a variety show that they perform every week, because
that's right.
There's so many talented Stampleys out there and their ilk, but in all seriousness, I think, we're very lucky to have someone not just talented on stage and or on video, you know, on film, but also talented in terms of the vision for that. The fact that I think the Milwaukee Black Theater Festival is super successful this second year and is going to continue to grow. And it's leaders like her, DeMonte Heron, and others, right, that are leading the way in Milwaukee. And so we're lucky to have them here doing that.
You know who else we're lucky to have, Mac?
You're thinking for All Elite Wrestling, who came through last week to bring their wrestling joy to Milwaukee, right? That's what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Of course it is. But maybe more importantly, I'm thinking of our listeners.
That's the right answer.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support the pod, please share it with others, post about it on social, and leave a rating and review, or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org.
Imagine This Podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sherd. Make sure you also listen and subscribe to back episodes of Black Imagination and Artsford MK, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up at Twitter, Insta at Imagine_MKE, or Facebook, Imagine MKE. We'll catch you next Tuesday, when we'll be joined by Heather Dunn, the Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of West Bend Mutual Insurance Company, and who also serves on the boards of the United Performing Arts Fund and the Museum of Wisconsin Art. Till then, till Tuesday.